Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:11 p.m. and that is Central Time, and today is August 12th. Well, there's a lot of talk right now about the Delta variant. I thought it would be particularly relevant to highlight some of the charts, because the US chart looks like it is ramping higher. And one thing that I think is also interesting is that there's been a great deal of intermittency in terms of the data that's being reported. You can see these white lines that are appearing in here, and we didn't have quite the same intermittency on the way up back in October through to December. So certainly there is an uptrend, there's no denying that. Then we can also contrast this with the number of deaths, and what I find, and I think it's particularly relevant, is that this looks exactly like the UK did not all that long ago. So if we look at the UK chart, well, we had the pop up in cases, and the big question at the time was whether the number of deaths would also trend higher, and that has not occurred, even though the number of cases ramped higher and has subsequently peaked. So this might also be a reflection of what happened in India. So India had this phenomenal advance in the number of cases, going from practically none to over, almost 400,000 a day, and then back down again. So there are certainly lessons to be drawn here, and particularly because the number of deaths has also declined measurably in India. And in fact, New Delhi today had no deaths at all for, I think it was like the ninth consecutive day in a row. So there are some conclusions we can draw just based upon these three charts. And I think the most important of those is that the transmissibility of the Delta variant is extremely high. So cases tend to ramp higher very quickly, and it's to be expected that the trajectory in the USA will follow that of India and the UK, and probably more like the UK because the vaccination rate is relatively similar. So we can anticipate that the number of cases will ramp higher. There will be an increase in the number of deaths, sure, just simply by the volume of new cases. And considering that it is highly transmissible and quite similar, at least reportedly so, to chickenpox, well, if it's as transmissible as chickenpox, it means everyone's going to get it or at least encounter someone who's infected. And then it's really down to our own individual immune systems, how well we deal with it. There's plenty of evidence to suggest that people who are vaccinated have a somewhat better encounter with it. And even then, it doesn't mean that people who aren't who have not been vaccinated don't have any natural immunity. The one thing that no one's as discussed is about natural immunity. But if we just simply take the models that we have from India and the UK, then we can anticipate the number of cases in the US will spike higher, then come straight back down again, and that the number of deaths will not spike in the same manner as the number of cases. So that's pretty much where we are right now. So then if we start to think about this, well, there's been a meaningful pullback in the performance of the airline sector on a global basis. So the Global Jets ETF, which includes airlines from all over the world, has recovered pretty admirably from the lows back in March of last year, got all the way back to test the lower side of the overhead trading range that persisted between about 2017 and 19, and then it encountered resistance. So it's now trading below the trend mean. If there were going to be a very significant decline in demand for airline seats, well, we might anticipate that this chart will not recover. But if the Delta variant flares up and then flares back down, then we might anticipate that this will only be a temporary setback. And this, I think, is particularly relevant when we come to consider the increasing demand for M&A activity in the UK's aeronautics sector. So Meggitt is the latest company to be underbid, and there's the potential for a competitive bidding war erupting. And it's not as if the share price has been particularly inspiring over the course of the last 7 or 8 years. It looked like it was going to pop on the upside in 2019, and then we had the pandemic, so the share collapsed. But now we have an aggressive bid to acquire the company. So, what does the company in fact do? Well, they produce parts for the aeronautics sector. But one of the things that they focus on is cooling mechanisms. And cooling mechanisms are particularly relevant when we start thinking about hypersonic flight. And hypersonic flight is certainly something that every government-funded defense network is currently working on. But then we also have the space race, which is now more of a private enterprise than a government enterprise. So there is the clear potential for more hypersonic flight to evolve over the course of the next decade. And the UK has been funding the creation of the air-breathing rocket through reaction engines for years now. The three companies that have got a big part in that are Meggitt and BAE Systems. So that's another company that has been, well, there hasn't been a lot of M&A activity attached to it, but it has been unremarkable in terms of its performance over the course of the last 4 years. But it did break higher over the course of the last few weeks, and at least it is at new highs over the last 12 months. It certainly has more room to perform here in order to clearly demonstrate a return to demand dominance. And then Rolls-Royce is the other major company with an input into reaction engines. And what they're trying to do is to build an air-breathing rocket that will not have to carry a lot of fuel to get up into orbit and can travel at speeds of upwards of Mach 5. So that's a very significant potential innovation that's in the pipeline that has not yet been readied for commercial activity. And we see that there is an increasing interest in acquiring companies that might have at least optionality in terms of this future. So there's a lot of competition going on right now to secure pieces of companies that might have a window on the future of aircraft travel, and most particularly because there's still a lot of uncertainty about civilian travel and the demand for airlines over the course of the next few years, because nobody really knows what the consumer response is will be over the medium term to fears about the virus. But most particularly then, we also don't know what additional variants will look like. So there's going to be this war of attrition. And eventually consumers are likely to become inured to the risk. And people will just simply want to get on with their lives. And arguably we're probably there already. There were hundreds of thousands of people at the Lollapalooza concert in the US last week. There are hundreds of thousands of people at the Sturgis biking event in North Dakota right now. So it's hardly surprising that there's rising numbers of cases when you have large numbers of people in very close proximity to one another. Rolls-Royce continues to put in a first step above the Type 2 bottom. So we had the acceleration on the downside, the sequence of lower rally highs, then we had the failed break, massive reaction against the prevailing trend, and a period of right-hand extension. So this is a Type 2 bottom with right-hand extension, and as long as it's holding the lower side of the range, then the potential is that it will be able to recover in due course. And of course, Rolls-Royce generates a substantial amount of its overall revenue from service agreements on aircraft, so it's a leveraged play on numbers of miles flown, while at the same time also offering leverage to the defense sector and to potentially hypersonic travel at some point in the future? Well, then we can also just simply look at the technology sector overall. The Nasdaq remains quite steady. So we continue to have this extremely inert environment on Wall Street. And the VIX index has come right back down again. And the S&P 500 was up in a somewhat more dynamic manner in here today. And certainly there's the potential, at least, that we'll have additional upside. But at the same time, this market has been going sideways without any kind of significant decline for a while. And now the question is, will it be able to continue to sustain this? And will we see a re-acceleration of the trend overall? Or are we going to see some consolidation before we see a meaningful pop on the upside? So I think it's 50-50 at this stage, and I continue to hold a hedge short. I just think that we're due at least some pause in consolidation. But I think investors are at least beginning to price in the potential that, having secured the infrastructure bill, that the US government is now going to also be able to secure $3.5 trillion in spending. Maybe they even have to not be quite as ambitious, and they might only get $2.5 trillion. But nonetheless, that's an extraordinary amount of money. And when we then think about gold, well, it pulled back extraordinarily violently into last week and the beginning of this week, and now it's bouncing. So the number of cases in India peaked back in May, and it was a big surprise to the consumer. And India is a major consumer of gold. And China has locked down half the economy now, so that would suggest that they're probably not buying as much gold either. So those are two big consumers of gold that may be sitting out of the market at present. So despite the fact that there is the potential for an extraordinarily large quantity of additional money to be printed, well, we might have to wait for a better recovery in India and China in order to soak up available supply such as it is. But it is, I think, likely that we're close to a low. And the gold bugs, well, excuse me, the gold miners index is still steady here in the region of the lower side of this first step above the 7-year base formation. Then we can think about the industrial resources. Well, Rio Tinto announced a big special dividend in here today, so the share pulled back immediately to price that in. But we can see that they have been paying special dividends on a pretty regular basis since 2019. So the dividend growth is in excess of 100%, and over the last 5 years it's been running on average at 45%. So we're talking about a rather extraordinary dividend overall. BHP hasn't been quite as generous, but they are reporting earnings next Tuesday, and it's quite likely that they're also going to surprise on the upside. When we think about the LME Metals Index, it's been trending higher in a really quite impressive manner, and it continues to steady from that 4,000 level, and it's looking like very like the copper chart overall. So copper prices have at least rebounded in the near term from the lower side of this evolving range. Tin prices have been completely resurgent over the course of the last few months. And I think this does raise an important question, and it's going to be the question for the industrial resources sector: is it cyclical or secular? We had an impressive rebound off the lows in 2008, and now tin prices are at a new all-time high. So we had a very significant advance off the lows in 2008. There was a lot of talk about infrastructure development. China embarked upon massive spending and pretty much bailed out the entire global economy. And now we're looking at the potential for the the reorientation of the global economy along carbon neutral lines and or carbon free lines, which is in fact an additional amplification of those environmental concerns. And that is creating demand for industrial resources. But it's not all going to happen at once. So the industrial resources market is certainly pricing in a lot of additional demand overall. And it's not just tin or nickel. When we think about the lead acid batteries and demand for lead overall, well, lead prices have been trending higher in really quite a consistent manner. So this is all benign for the mining sector overall, but for the major industrial metal miners, Rio Tinto, BHP, and Vale, well, then they have to contend with the I think evolving downtrend in iron ore. So it peaked a couple of months ago. It failed to sustain the move above 200. It's now pulling back below the trend mean. It's in additional negative territory in here today. It's pulling back into the underlying range. It will have triggered a midpoint danger line stop today. So this is no longer a consistent trend. There is the potential that because we have a short-term oversold condition, it could rebound in the short term, but it has a lot of work to do in order to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And that might act as a tax on the continued performance of Rio and BHP and their ability to surprise on the upside with dividends, since iron ore represents about half of their businesses overall. Oil prices were pretty unremarkable in here today. So we're still, though, in an environment where the price is holding around the $70 area, but not surprising on the upside. When we think about the wider growth for the global economy, the Vietnamese dong is strengthening, and that's not normal. When we look over the course of the last decades, the number of times when the dong has been successfully trading below its trend mean have been extraordinarily rare. So, this is indicative of the strength of the economy, and then we can also think about the fact that Vietnam is a key beneficiary of increasing geopolitical tensions with China. But the strength of the currency is perhaps a bit of a headwind for the nominal price of assets there in the short term. So we're probably due some consolidation because Vietnam has never had to deal with an appreciating currency for any kind of sustained period before. And it might take some reorientation of businesses to allow for that. Then, one thing that I thought was also interesting is we've seen a lot of spending in a lot of the Latin American portion of the economy, but Mexico in particular has been rather parsimonious in its spending. So everywhere else has been Argentina, Colombia, Brazil, Chile, Peru. They've been spending significant proportions of their GDP on support. Mexico hasn't. So that has been one of the causal factors in the continued strength of the Mexican peso. Now, was a little weaker in here today, and it's right in the region of this 20 area, and that's the upper side of the underlying trading range. So, and it's also close to the region of the trend mean, and there's a very well-defined sequence of lower rally highs there. So now the big question is, will the dollar muster the wherewithal to break upwards from here, or will the peso continue to appreciate? And I think that Mexico is a place that has the potential to benefit considerably from rising geopolitical tensions, and its stock market is now right in the region of the highs over the last few years. If it can sustain a move above 50, well, then we're back in a medium-term demand-dominated environment. So it's certainly looking like a more interesting place overall. India is another market that should benefit from rising geopolitical tensions because it will become a favored market by Western governments and hopefully then oriented to act as a bulwark against China's expansion in Asia. And the Nifty continues to extend its advance. And there's the potential that we are back in a new credit cycle for India overall. And that's generally positive for banking sectors. And the banks in India continue to trend higher and are right in the region of the upper side of the most recent range. So that continues to look benign. But I think it's also noteworthy to highlight that banks everywhere are doing pretty well. So they have been given blank checks to lend by their respective governments, and then they have also got increasing demand for loans as people wish to spend their way to happiness in the aftermath of the pandemic. So that is certainly helping to support their business lines. And then, of course, they get to increase their, because of demand, they're getting to increase their margins, even though interest rates haven't been rising. But of course, they do benefit when interest rates do rise. And Australian banks have now broken what was effectively a 5-year downtrend and are consolidating and pushing through and away from the 8,000 level on the ASX 300 banks, the ASX 200. Had broken out a couple of months ago, and it continues to extend its advance overall. When we think about the US banking sector, I think it was easy for a lot of people to think it would never recover. And certainly, companies like Citigroup have still got a long way to go. But the index is consolidating now in the region of the peaks from back in 2007, and it looks like a bullish consolidation. I think that's particularly relevant. And of course, those are big international banks. The regional banks are also continuing to do well. The banking sector that's been written off more than anywhere else is European banks, and Europe's banks continue to also hold this sequence of higher reaction lows. So there's a lot of worry out there about the Delta variant. There's a lot of worry about the implications of the climate report and what that's going to mean in terms of our standards of living and how governments are going to address the threats to the extent that they will address them at all. But what we can certainly think about is that both of these factors will require a great deal of liquidity. And that's something that central banks have been talking about removing. And the question, I think, has to be posed, how serious are they really? So, in the event that they do begin to taper, they're going to be extraordinarily cautious because the recovery is only really just beginning and unemployment levels are still high. And one thing is that before the pandemic, the number of jobs available relative to the number of unemployed people was at around one. So there was one for one, or I guess it would be close to zero. Whereas now it's also close to zero, except for the fact that there are way more unemployed people and way more jobs available. So we have this mismatch. And this is the kind of thing that will push up wages and create inflationary pressures that are not transitory. But then the big question comes back to the commodity cycle, whether this is like the big pop on the upside that we had between 2008 and 2011, which eventually rolled over, or whether this is something that has got legs. I do think that there are some commodities will do better than others, and particularly copper. Copper continues to look like it is a secular bull market candidate, despite the fact that prices are consolidating right now. If we were to think of a wild card, then China has to be the wild card. The uncertainty that's being introduced into the market there is real, and if they have made the determination that asset price inflation and speculation in the economy is a threat to single party rule, well, then they don't care about markets, and it's really only a political decision that's holding everything together. And I think that that is a significant potential risk that we all need to be aware of, because it can have knock-on effects for a lot of different sectors overall. So, in the meantime, we're still in a reasonably benign environment. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.